Welcome to Female Future, a podcast about female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers. Throughout history, women changed the world, and they continue to do so today. But too often, we don't hear about it. Many women's stories go untold, their voices are unheard, and their impact is overlooked. This is a podcast exploring the achievements of women who have helped to shape society in arts, politics, science, and innovation. My name is Yvonne Eisenring. I am a Swiss writer and talk show host. And for this podcast series, I will talk to women from Switzerland, the UK, and Israel. And this episode is about food and nutrition. And I'd like to welcome my two guests, Michal Bitterman and Christina Sten-Jakobsen. Thank you so much for taking the time for this talk.
Thank you for inviting us.
Hello, hello. Grüezi miteinander.
Michal Bitterman is an expert and lecturer in sustainability. She's the CEO and co-founder of the Natural Step Israel, which is a non-profit organization that promotes sustainability. She's also the former chairperson and co-founder of the Israel Green Building Council. Michal studied law and sustainability, and she lives in Jaffa. Christina Sten-Jakobsen spent the first 12 years of her career at one of the world's largest snack companies. After that, she moved on to working with entrepreneurs and startups. A year ago, she joined the Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley as a managing director. She grew up in Denmark, but has been living in Switzerland for 15 years now. And Christina, I read that you believe food is the best thing in the world. And also the absolute worst. What makes it the best and the absolute worst?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't believe that food is the best thing in the world? I mean, show me somebody who can go a day without food. There's many elements to food. I think one that we should never, ever forget is how it brings together people, how we celebrate, and food is always a part of a celebration. But also how food is nurturing our bodies. It makes a little person grow into a strong adult. It makes an athlete perform his very best. It makes people who need their brain over the day be at their best through what they eat. And there's so much culture. We travel with food, and it's just the best thing in the world.
But also the worst, you say?
Yes, unfortunately.
Why?
You know, when agriculture came in, it was probably the biggest change to mankind. It was what enabled us to start trading, and it enabled us to build businesses. And that's where it all started, with agriculture. Unfortunately, some way down the road, we kind of overdid it. The Industrial Revolution, we start mass producing at lowest cost without knowing that there were consequences, without being aware that the resources of the planet Earth are not infinite. So here in the 21st century, we all got a wake-up call and say, hey, listen, all the plastics that we have ever produced and wrapped in, 80% of that is still around on this planet Earth. We are producing 30% of the greenhouse gas emission is coming from our food production value chain. We're using 70% of the fresh water in this production. And so I could keep going the whole podcast about this. So we, the food systems around the world, are broken. We're off track. We are living as if we don't need to care about tomorrow. Luckily, and that's where hope sets in, there's a large group of people who now have this awareness and say, yes, we are the problem, from farmers to producers to consumers. We are the problem with our food systems, but we are also the solution. And that's where, why and where it's so great to be a part of the movement towards sustainable food systems.
Is the solution to become vegan? Is that what you recommend everyone?
Absolutely not. I think also it's utopia to go out and say, okay, heads up, tomorrow we're all vegan. We need to acknowledge that we're dealing with humans. We love habits. We hate being out of our comfort zone. We hate changes, bottom line. The solution lies within everybody doing a little bit more. So if you eat meat 7 days a week, why don't you reduce that to 6 or 5 or maybe even 4? Why don't you try a oat milk instead of your cow milk and just have both or do half for the kids or whatever. Do the little that you feel comfortable with and feel rewarded about. I'm a part of that movement too. That is the first step. We should not start shaming. We should not start pointing fingers. We should not start glorifying ourselves by those who are able to do the big moves and change. Great for them and good. And also, there are health elements. There are also sustainability elements in these changes. So we need to go slow. We can't go slow. We need to go steady, but we should not lose people behind. It's not about 1 million people becoming vegan, but it's about 8 billion people doing something.
So it's about like making little changes and substitute, like for example, milk and not just like change the entire life.
Yeah. What I advise everybody is to sit down with their family around the table and saying, listen, what are the things we can do? Where do we feel comfortable? Should we start buying local? Should we start buying from these shops where you can refill your own jars? Should we do meat-free Tuesdays and Thursdays? Should we start walking when we go shopping? Should we start producing our own yogurts? That can be, you know, with milk or at home, whatever, but to reduce the plastic. And what are the little things that we feel would be fun, meaningful, and that we can actually do.
Mm-hmm. Michal, you gave a TED Talk 5 years ago, and I was kind of, it was mind-blowing because you say that the average person throws away a quarter of the food this person buys. And I was like, no way, that's a quarter is so much. I think like I only throw away like a tiny little bit. Am I wrong? Is everyone just wrong?
What you say is exactly the psychology that is, you know, is around all of our heads. That's exactly what happens. We all think that we really are consuming very ecologically and that we really know what we buy and what we use and how we use it. And then what we discovered is that most people are totally wrong, not because we want to be wrong, we hate being wrong, but because we don't really see the food. We are kind of blind to all the waste that is happening in the way that we consume food. And in the end, it's a large magnitude of food that is going away. And yes, it's around a quarter. And I can say that in some of the people's houses, it's even more than a quarter. You know, the quarter is just a mean, but there are people who waste much more. And they're not aware of it.
What is the biggest mistake people make? What is the biggest mistake I make?
I wouldn't call it a mistake. I think that the first thing that we need as a society to acknowledge is that we are not aware of the waste. We don't see it. Once we'll be aware of the waste, we'll see where are the things that we can change. And I really want to reflect on what you were saying, Christina, earlier. It's true. How we can adjust the way that we practice food, we consume, we store, we cook, and then what we throw, and we can see a lot of changes. So the first thing is to say, everyone is part of the problem. Don't feel guilty about it. It's okay. No, we didn't see it. Now it's the time to open our eyes and see it and remove the blindness. And then take a week of your life and see how you cook, store, what you buy, what you don't use. And then everything will be so much more clearer. And you'll see a lot of solutions that are just around, you know, they're around the corner and very easy to adapt. And we can talk about it later that you can really do. So come and first of all, see it. And then everything will be much easier.
Let's talk about it now. What are like the steps that everyone can do? So we, for example, say that I know a lot of families, they do grocery shopping like once a week. Saturday, the entire family like goes to the supermarket and buys for the entire week. Is that a problem?
So we went into houses and we looked at people and how they consume food for around a week. And it was really funny because most of them say, you don't need to come to our house. We are very ecological. You won't see any waste at all. And by the end of the week, they all say, oh my God, we didn't have any clue. Thank you for sharing. And now we can change a bit of our habits. So it really comes up to around 17 reasons why we waste. We won't go over all of them, but let's talk about the main ones. First is that we buy a lot. Like you said, we buy a lot. We are very tempted by the 1+1 saving or 3 in 15 and all of these. And what we forget is sometimes when we buy all those things, we think it's really, really cheap. But then at our houses, we don't really use all of it because of many reasons. We don't like it. We don't store it properly. We decide that it's, you know, we go and move an apartment, whatever the reason is. And then it becomes really expensive and we throw it away. So first of all, it's about buying and being more conservative in what we buy and whatnot. The second thing is a whole story about how we prolong the lifetime of our groceries through the storage. We can store things properly. And if we give a few examples and learn a bit how to do it, we can really prolong the lifetime of almost all of our groceries. You know, don't put a cucumber next to a tomato. It's a basic thing. Most people don't know it. You can prolong the lifetime of both of them. How do you store vegetables? How do you store? Yeah, what do you put in the refrigerator? What do you put in the freeze? These kind of things, a small effort, and then you can really use things for longer. The third is expiry dates. People are really afraid of expiry dates. When they see a date, it doesn't really matter if it's a expiry date or a recommendation date or the way it was, the date it was produced. They're like, oh my God, I need to throw it away. No, read it, see what it really recommends, and then act by it. And another thing I will say about expiry dates, there are many things that don't even need an expiry date and you can use them forever as long as you stored it properly. Yeah. But if it's a winery or wine or a honey and salt, you don't even need an expiry date. So you can really use it and it's perfectly good, I would say forever, to use it. So these are kind of three reasons. Should I go more?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, continue. Why shouldn't I put the cucumber next to tomato?
Because I just shouldn't. You shouldn't. But if you want to know why, because it makes them go unfresh more quickly. So if you want to make it prolong the lifetime of them, you should separate them. And then each one has a better lifetime on your shelves.
I'd just like to put another comment because now today we are Israel and we're Denmark here. We are Israel and Switzerland here. When it comes to food waste, the European average is around 180 kilograms per capita per year. Yeah. And then there is a country like Denmark who's worked on this, changing it through the laws to educating consumers, then they're down to 100 kilo now per capita per year. Switzerland, a country with population who cares about nature like nobody else, they sort their garbage, they want to do good, they want to follow the rules, 320 kilograms per capita per year. So we are the black sheep of Europe here. That's you and me here, Yvonne. We are the baddies. Because
we're too wealthy?
As Michael, yeah, that's part of it. But as Michael said, we're not educated. We're not aware. We don't even know. You said to yourself, no way, I'm not wasting anything. I would say the same. I'm not wasting. We are. We waste in the restaurants. We waste at home. We waste everywhere we go. We see the yogurt has expired and we toss it. Instead of opening it, smelling it, looking at it, no, it's not green. It doesn't smell bad. It's been in the fridge. Let's eat it today. So we need education and understanding for it, because if we solve the food waste problem, we have solved a major part of all the problems I mentioned before about greenhouse gases and about water waste and about plastic and. So that is a great place to start, especially for Switzerland.
I will add to it that what I see is that another reason why we waste a lot is that mostly children have never been in a place that they saw where food is actually produced and grown. So they think that food comes from the supermarket and we will always have food in the supermarket. So I can say, in Hebrew, we say lo ba li, or I don't know how you say it in other languages, but you say, I don't want it. So you go and bring back your food by the end of the day and it goes directly to the garbage. I think that this connection that we have as a society to the sources of the food and how hard it is to grow a tomato and how much energy and love and water and people were really put in this process of growing this own tomato and then to bring it to the place that we can purchase it. And then when it's in the garbage, you need to put more resources in order to treat it. So I think that this disconnection that we have as a society from the sources of our food, and we think that food is from the supermarket and we will always have more and we can always jump in and buy more, makes us really easy on throwing food and easy on saying, I just don't want it because it doesn't look perfect, because it's not tasty, because it's a day after you cooked it and so on. And we found that more reasons, I talked about the reasons earlier, more reasons are the fact that people are looking at these different shows on television and food looks so perfectly good. And then when they try to make it, it doesn't look perfectly good because we're not all of us chefs, but it's good enough to eat. And then they say, okay, it doesn't look as good, and they just throw it. It's because children don't value it much and they throw it. Because we like to host a lot of people and show, you know, this abundance. Come, we'll open a table, come and join us. And we don't think about it that let's have quality and not quantity. So there are many, many reasons, but in the end, it's many reasons that are in our, you know, in our hands that we can really control and change. And I wanted to say something else. A lot of the reasons why we have such a large magnitude of food waste is not because of things that we do. We are talking here in the podcast about what each of us as individual can do, but we need to remember that, as Christiana said earlier, the system is broken and many things along the chain create the problem and make us throw away. And one thing is that food is thrown in the supermarkets. Instead of allowing us to buy in a lower price before it's expired, they're just throwing it away. So this is something that we can really change by dynamic pricing and other tools.
What has to change? What would you both suggest? Or is there, can you also like say, because you both work in that field, that there is hope that it is already changing? The system, the broken system, that it is changing?
We talk a lot about the solutions. Where are they? But I would like to say, Michael here, we need to start with the basic love and appreciation for food. I mean, food scarcity, we haven't had it in Europe since World War II, I guess, and most of us have never experienced that. We stand at the threshold of scarcity coming up, a global one. It won't hit us, our countries first, but we will eventually also feel it to some degree. So this source, the shelves are full when we go to the supermarket. Okay, we had a hint of it during COVID, but we don't know anything else. So I'm sitting here with my coffee, and before I drink it, I should actually think about, there was once upon a time a little tree that was watered, fertilized, took sun, somebody took care of it for 3 to 4 years before it made its first coffee cherry, which then was handpicked by somebody and carried and depulped and transported across oceans to be roasted and packed in a beautiful pack and put on the shelf and la la la. So there's so much love and affection coming from Mother Nature through people to my cup of coffee this morning. And I should not just slug it down. I should take 7 seconds to say, thank you, Mother Nature, and everybody else who gave me this cup of coffee. I'm appreciative. And because my coffee beans happen to expire today, doesn't mean I can't drink them the rest of the week. They're perfectly fine still. So I think this grounded appreciation for Mother Nature and the people behind the food that's been brought to us, we need to bring that back. And some people say grace before a meal, and I don't care who you believe in or what you believe in, but you should be grateful for the food on your table. And we need to teach not just the children. I think they more will teach us, but everybody needs to stop taking food for granted as an unlimited source. We're seeing it also now with the war, unfortunately, that the breadbasket of Europe is being hit. And there are countries that are experiencing now they can only buy 2 loaves of bread instead of the normal 4 because of that. So bring back the appreciation and the gratitude for food. That's number one.
And I think it could be really a fun experience, what you say. I mean, the appreciation can bring a lot of quality, looking at your food better, looking at, you know, the transparency of food, understanding where your food came from, maybe experience growing food, even on a small scale on your garden or, you know, balcony. And I think it's something that will bring a lot of joy to everyone and creativity.
But what I also kind of see is that, well, at least in my bubble of people, that the people talk more and more and are more and more aware of what they eat. It's so they have like, allergic or they have like special diets. So like the food itself became more also of a lifestyle, like eating became a lifestyle. It changed. Does that have an impact? Is that a good thing? Or do you think it's like, we just don't like see food as what it should be? Well, we kind of make it our, I don't know, like a lifestyle thing?
I think it's a part of an overall change. My vision is that the norm will be different, that the norm will be that throwing away is bad and you shouldn't throw away. It will be something that is totally outside of any norm and standard. And I think that what you say is part of an overall revolution. And I'm not surprised because the vegan issue and the health issue started before the sustainability and food waste, it really clicked. So I hope that if we continue to talk about it and push these things in all of the different streams and legislation, people awareness and, you know, business and so on, that eventually in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, the norm will be different and food waste, anti-food waste, locality, organic food, looking at, you know, seasons, looking at where things were grown and so on will be part of the norm.
I think what you're tapping into is here the personalized nutrition, like how mm-hmm. we have a differentiated needs. It might be religious, it might be health, it might be cultural. And we will see that increasingly happen. And what is also happens from a science point of view is a deeper understanding of how this precision nutrition or personalized nutrition based on your DNAs, based on a lot of biomarkers, will actually allow food to be thy medicine, and meaning that a lot of diseases can then be avoided. Now, it might be that for you, strawberries will give you an inflammation. And for me, it would be if I ate spinach or something. And that inflammation makes us more tired. It makes us unable to take up all the nutrients that we should take from the other food we need, and so on and so forth. And in worst case, it will lead to certain types of cancers or other diseases. So we know that in 60% of all deaths, food, nutrition has played a factor in it. And imagine if we could better understand the needs of the individual and avoid these food groups, which provokes us and into having inflammations or worse things. If we would understand that better, we would be healthier people with a better quality of life. We would also need to eat less, because that's also something about when we talk about feeding the future population. We are actually eating way too much. And if we would have a better nutritious uptake, we wouldn't. So that part of science and of food trends is definitely something we'll see more of in the future. And no, it's not just for the affluent and the people that knows or has the finances to go into this. It will also be for the low middle income countries indeed.
Did your personal perspective on food and nutrition change at some point, or was it always the same? Did you learn something or experience something that made a change?
I mean, from my point, it changed dramatically. I studied food science and technology. And back then, makes me sound like I'm 100 years old, but back then, there was no such thing as sustainability on the curriculum. There was no such thing as innovation even on the curriculum. So back then it was really the thinking of how can we produce with the means we have at hand and as much as possible, as cheap as possible. You know, that was kind of said, yes, we learned about nutrition, which again here was one size fits all. A little bit is the food pyramid we know and you know, balance it out. And if you have a varied diet, you will cover all your needs. Hallelujah. Today, everything I learned has changed, everything I believed. I set out on this study to develop healthy chocolates. Today, I'm in a place where I want to empower everybody, be it the biggest food company in the world or the smallest consumer in the world, to do what he, she, it can do to change the food system into a sustainable one. So it's changed dramatically. And yeah, I think, and it will keep changing. You know, this is not the end of the destination. I do believe we will reach sustainable food systems. And I do believe that something else will come on top here and we will learn more. So absolutely. And getting back to the nutrition, you know, I used to eat a varied diet to cover all my needs. Today, I know that the apple I ate 25 years ago compared to the apple I eat today, the apple today only have 5% of the nutrients, which means today I have to take supplements. I get my omega-3 acids, I get my vitamin Ds. Okay, that's from the sun, well, not so much the food, but all these things. The stressful lives we're living, the soil that is deprived, our vegetables and fruit was grown to be resilient and look beautiful, not to have high nutrients. So that is one thing. Supplements are needed. I recommend everybody to take supplements to stay strong today, for example.
What would be your answer, Michal? Is there anything that changed your perspective?
My perspective was changed completely, of course. I always say that I can understand the blindness because I was also part of it. I came from a house that food was amazing. My mother is the best cook ever. And I always loved, food from the house. And always when she asked me, where do you want to go and eat on your birthday? I always said, at home, I want your food. And I prefer it on every other, on any other restaurant available. And I remember that. So that was something that I always loved food and something that was very basic in how I lived. And I remember that when I came to Sweden and I studied my master's there on sustainability, so at the first fika that was, everyone was supposed to bring something to eat. And they told, bring as much as you can eat. And I was like, okay, it was like really weird for me, this kind of request. And I brought, a whole thing that I cooked. And I saw that people bring like a quarter or half, half a bag and thing. And it was so weird for me. And I said, what's going on? Why? Like I admit it looked very cheap to me to bring this kind of food. And, why are you not generous? And so on. And I think that it kind of made a shift. And I said, okay, now today, I understand that it's not cheap. It's actually more sustainable and respectful for the food because there was enough for everyone and nothing was, we didn't need anything else. And I remember that because it was a wake up to see where I started at the beginning of the master's and where I am today, or even at the end of the master's, understanding that this is kind of, the shift that we need to do. And it's a lot about psychology and how we treat food and so on.
So you both working in the food industry, what are your organizations about?
The Natural Step Israel is a non-for-profit organization. We started more than 10 years ago, and we are in general promoting sustainability in society. We want to strive for a healthy, just society within the boundaries of the natural ecosystem. So we try to promote sustainability through innovation and quality. And we do a lot of projects of empowering people, capacity building, working in cities on urban sustainability, working with companies. And in the last 9 years, we're leading the biggest and largest project in Israel around food waste. We are striving to minimize food waste. We did a big project of called the Sustainability Transition Lab to minimize food waste. And in general, we're advocating and talking about the resiliency of food systems and how we need to be more sustainable and how to do it.
And Christina?
Swiss Food Nutrition Valley is a young association, just 2 years old, a nonprofit organization. We have around 100 members, which are across the food system. So we have the world's largest food company and possibly the world's smallest food company. We have governmental bodies, the big universities, we have investors, we have accelerators. So all the players across the food system are members with us. And the one thing that they sign up to, all of them, is the higher purpose of unleashing innovation towards a better planetary and human health. So that's where they meet each other and come together. And what we do is concretely networking, knowledge sharing, collaborate projects, and everything in our power to get the innovation out there fast enough so that we can build this sustainable food system that we are so hardcore dying to see happening before us.
I wish we had more time. I would love to talk so much more with both of you, but we're coming to an end. And I have three very short, rather personal questions before we say goodbye. And I would like you to answer them both. Because it's a podcast about female icons, and I'd like to know, what is the best thing about being a woman?
Oh, where to start? I mean, the best part about being a woman is being a woman. I mean, it's the best of everything. Now, to put it in the context of changing the food system, I think we don't just need men and women. We need diversity, you know, across the system. We need farmers and consumers and everything. But when it comes to women, and especially women driving this change, the fact that we are the more passionate gender often, the fact that we drive with emotion and with people and bringing on, I think that is playing a key role. And this is more of a female trait. I'm not saying that men cannot be passionate and drive this, they absolutely can, but that is typical female trait, which I see a lot of women do, inspiring talks, inspiring actions, listening to people. And that female power is a fundamental part of changing it, because ambitions, we're going to have so much headwinds that ambitions will fall and find another way to play. But passion will move on.
Michal?
On a more personal level, I think it's amazing to be a woman and give birth, give life. That's one of the best things. And I never wanted not to be a woman, and I'm gladly a woman. So that's like on a personal level. On a more professional one, for me, it was always obvious that in any organization that I will found, women will be, you know, women will be leading it. So both in the Israel Green Building Council and the Natural Step Israel, it's a woman-led organizations. And it was important for me to bring women on board, because I still think that we don't get enough opportunities as men. And I think that it's very important to get this equality, to attain that equality. And yes, definitely both organizations are women-led.
The next question is, what are you proud of?
Christina?
Well, here we go. If you had been interviewing two men now, it would not have taken them 47 seconds to think this one over. They would have probably interrupting each other going, hey, listen.
No, because I'm not sure it's because we're not proud of things. I think that we need to find one thing that we're proud, then you need to select it. And it's really hard to think of one thing that you need to be proud of. I'm not sure it's because we're very shy and...
Well, maybe pride is not...
the right word?
No, it's not. Is pride attractive? I mean, if you said, who are you proud of? It would
be
easier.
What would be the answer?
Well, I'm proud of my 8-year-old daughter, you know. It's because of the attitude she has to life and the way she challenges her parents' daily doings and much more. I'm proud of all the members of the Swiss Food and Nutrition Valley, that they have teamed up for a higher purpose, which has little to do with profit. I am proud of you guys here in the studio, because we're speaking up about the food system and about women. So there I could go on and on. But a pride turn inwards, I'm blank.
Well, I think that's good as an answer. I would say like it's a 10.
I would say I'm proud of my intimate family, my couple and my two sons, and my broader family, my parents, which I'm influenced much every day in my actions and my perspective. I'm proud of my parents on how I was brought up, and both my mother and my father and my sister and brother. So I love my family and I'm proud about that. And also of all the, let's say on a less personal level, more professional, on all the change agents of sustainability, because it's tough. We hear a lot of no. And another no, and yet again, no. And we still pursue and we want to attain a better vision. And it's hard and it's tough and it's a lot of conflict of interest. And you need to really stick in it and believe in it and be there and understand that it's a marathon. And so I'm proud of my staff and my colleagues and in all over the world that are striving to get this vision, because it's not easy and it's not getting easier.
One last short question. What do you do when you need to take a rest from what you do?
In the last years, it's being with my intimate family, being with my two sons and doing a lot of things with them, crazy stuff and fun stuff and so on. So that's where my mind goes to, other places.
Okay.
Living in Switzerland, I seek to nature, to the mountains and go and play there. If it's been a lot going on, I need to recharge. I seek solitude in the mountain, go for a walk, sit on a rock high up and overlook and reflect. But if it's a regular weekend recharge, I play with my family, be it last weekend it was mountain biking, in the winter it's skiing, hiking, getting on the lake on any kind of vehicle, play, and laugh, and be out there with Mother Nature.
Thank you so much. It was really interesting. I will look at my food differently and try to waste less of the food. I'm really happy I had you both as my guests. Thank you so much for taking time for being here.
Thank you for hosting it.
Of course.
Thank you, Yvonne. It was great fun.
That was another episode of Female Future. If you want to discover more female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers, join us again for another talk with two outstanding women. Female Future is part of Women of Switzerland, which is a collaboration of the Embassy of Switzerland in the UK and the Embassy of Switzerland in Israel. This is a podcast highlighting the 50th anniversary of female suffrage in Switzerland. If you want to learn more, visit wakeupnow.ch.